So, good afternoon. Health, and I won't say it twice because everybody always says it. You need a, that isn't good enough. Do it another one. Okay. Good afternoon. Healthcare reform, as you know, is one of the most significant pieces of legislation passed in modern history, and it's created a good deal of passion on both sides of the aisle, both ends of the political spectrum. Some people want to repeal it, some people want to expand it, and some people just want to cling to what we've got. And so, we're going to update you today on where we are with healthcare reform. It remains a hot button issue, and we're going to do our best to try to let you know what's happening right now. As you know, healthcare reform is a complex issue. It's got a lot of moving parts, and it's really very difficult, if not impossible, to keep up on everything that's happening. So I would welcome you, if you know more about this than some of us do when we're giving you the updates, when we get to the Q&A, to please update us all on what's happening, because the ultimate goal here is to keep the dental public health community as informed and as up-to-date as possible. Before going further, I'd like to thank Myron for putting this session together. Thank you, Myron. And to let you know that I'm delighted to participate. I'm not an expert on healthcare reform, but as Chief Dental Officer of the U.S. Public Health Service and as the Chair of the HHS Oral Health Coordinating Committee, I know a few things that are happening, and I'll let you know what those are. Let's see, how do we get this to go forward? I have nothing to disclose, and I also need to let you know that what I'm going to say are my own opinion and not the opinions of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, nor the Department of Health and Human Services. So this is my presentation overview, and you'll see that right under the presentation overview, I have a line there that says, great potential against a challenging backdrop. And I think that's where we are today. We have such a tremendous amount of great things happening, and they're layered over this horrible economic situation that we have with the federal government and at state government levels, all levels, really. So these are the these are the items I'm going to cover under the Affordable Care Act. I realize there are other things that are part of the Affordable Care Act, but I'm going to cover these five bullets. Also, talk with you briefly about some other national oral health initiatives that are important and that are happening, and kind of take a brief look towards the future. I get it. So, perhaps the greatest accomplishment in the Affordable Care Act is the expansion of dental coverage for children. In just a few short years, we're going to have literally every child in the country covered for dental services. That's an enormous accomplishment. And so the state exchanges are starting to be developed, and the big question now is what will be covered in the essential dental benefit package. So the essential health benefits, in order to move forward on that, the Department of Health and Human Services asked the IOM to put together an expert panel and report back to HHS. Realized that it was not the IOM's charge to recommend specific services for inclusion in the benefits package. Instead, it was to develop policy foundations and recommend criteria and methods for defining and updating an essential benefits package. So that report came back earlier this month to the Secretary. And we'll talk a little bit about what's covered in that package a little bit later. But essentially, the guiding principles were to consider the population's health needs as a whole, to encourage better health care by ensuring that good science is used to inform coverage decisions, essentially to be evidence-based, to emphasize the careful use of resources and to use economic tools and evaluation to improve the value and performance over time. So essentially, the whole idea is to balance coverage against cost. And we're seeing that play out at all levels, aren't we? You know, to what are we going to do with regard to provision of services and at the same time try to limit costs? So that's the whole idea behind this, this essential health benefits package. The essential health benefits package has to cover 10 areas. You know, including such things as ambulatory patient services, emergency services, hospitalization, maternity and newborn care, and so forth. And the 10th one is that they have to cover pediatric services, including oral and vision care. So that's what gets us to oral health. It's the pediatric services and the oral pediatric services that need to be covered. So the big question is what should be covered in that pediatric services package. And so I'll get into that in just a moment. It also says that standalone dental plans that are offered by insurance companies can be included in the state exchanges, and it recommends expansion of Medicare, Medicaid eligibility. So the top bullet, it describes what is required under the legislation. So you have to cover all pediatric dental services necessary to prevent disease and so forth. The question, as we all know, is, well, that's open to interpretation. So who's going to decide what this really means? The next bullet says that this is also a necessity, according to legislation, is that the scope of the essential health benefits have to be equal to the scope of benefits provided under a typical employer plan. And again, the question is, well, what's in a typical employer plan? And the final bullet is that it has to be evidence-based, which we're glad to see. So the question about what evidence-based guidelines and recommendations should be followed is still up in the air. IOM wanted input, and they asked for input from any number of sources. 50 dental organizations, including the Delta Dental Plans and a number of oral health organizations, got together, wrote the secretary, and said that these should be the guidelines that should be followed when developing an essential benefits package for dental. I think many of you are aware of these guidelines, at least in some form, and I won't go through them all, but they said, look at these when you're looking for evidence. So the IOM report came out on the 7th of October. It said, here are the criteria that should guide the development of the essential health benefits package. There's really some good public health principles in here, essentially to do as much as you can with the resources that are available. I really like the fourth bullet. It just sums it up just perfectly. Encourage better care practices by promoting the right care to the right patient in the right setting at the right time. That's what we want to do. And so the question then is, how do we get to that? But these are the guiding principles. There are also some other recommendations, and that is from the very start, that HHS needs to identify data and establish a research infrastructure that will support updating essential health benefits and assess the impact of benefits on people, their health, and access to care. So from the very start, they need to identify those. It does allow for innovation among states, so states don't have to necessarily follow the essential benefits package. If they offer their own exchange, they can offer other benefits if they can support that. And it also calls for the establishment of a National Benefits Advisory Council that will be nonpartisan. I hope that's true, that will advise on data and research plan and as we move forward. So the next steps in determining this essential health benefits, and for us the essential dental benefits package, is by May 1st, 2012, the secretary should come out with the package and say what's going to be actually included. And it will be what's included in a typical small employer plan in today's market. And then adjustments will follow. This will be something that changes over time, with the first changes allowed in 2016. So other provisions in the Affordable Care Act, under coverage and access. School-based health centers. It establishes a program for school-based health centers. I think Terry's going to talk about that in more detail, but just realize that that is already underway, and that one of the Healthy People 2020 objectives is to monitor how many school-based health centers have an oral health component to them. It also allows Indian tribes and tribal organizations to use the dental health aid therapist program if they're in a state that allows, alternative forms of practice. And right now, the Indian Health Service doesn't have any intentions of moving that to the lower 48 at the current time. There's also the establishment of a healthcare workforce commission and training, and Rick's going to get into these as part of his session, so I will I'll let him talk about those in greater detail. Also, you know, one of the columns here is funded, and many of these things are funded or not funded, and we've tried to put where possible what the president's budget for 2012 calls for, realizing, of course, that the president's budget for 2012 is dead on arrival anyway. So we're really looking forward to what the super committee says and how to move forward at that point. There are many people that think that we may not get a budget in 2012, and that 2013 will be the real battle year, but we'll see what happens. Also, graduate medical education and teaching health centers. This allows both medical and dental residents to be trained in community settings, and that's underway as well. So that's a nice step forward. All the prevention provisions, and many of these fall to CDC, have remained unfunded. You know, the establishment of a 5-year oral health campaign on prevention of oral diseases, demonstration grants to show the effectiveness of research-based dental caries disease management. I love that language. If you look at that carefully, demonstration grants to research the effectiveness of research-based dental caries disease management. And really what they were trying to do was to avoid using the word fluoride or fluoridation anywhere, but it would include fluoridation in that. And then also to expand sealant programs, sealant money for sealant programs to all 50 states. Infrastructure and surveillance, again, these are unfunded, but many of them are being met anyway. The oral health infrastructure requires the CDC to expand beyond the 20 states that we're currently funding for infrastructure and capacity. We don't see that coming anytime soon. We would like more money, but we'll be lucky at CDC to just maintain our own. And in fact, oral health at CDC, even though we're going through a reorganization, oral health has been protected. CDC had an 11% cut in their budget last year. Almost all programs lost money, but oral health has not lost any money or any employees. So, and we've been assured that we're going to be continuing that way, and that our focus will remain the same. As far as surveillance, PRAMs, there's something that says that PRAMs must be included in oral health surveillance, and that's already going to happen. And another one says that the NHANES data be kept to tooth-specific data. That's also going to continue, at least into the foreseeable future. So even though some of these things aren't funded, they're going to occur anyway. MEPS data has to be made available, and it is already available. Reports on MEPS come out, and MEPS data is used for research and some surveillance, and that will increase in the years ahead. CDC is looking into this a bit more right now. And that National Oral Health Surveillance System, that all states participate instead of just 16 states. And I think there was a misconception that only the funded states at CDC participated in NOS, but really all states pretty much participate in NOS anyway, at least at one level. But you know, they may not report on all the measures, but we're very close to hitting all 50 states. Something you may not have heard about is that the Affordable Care Act provisions affected the Public Health Service. One of the things it did was and these were all intended to be favorable to the Public Health Service. One of the things that it did was lift the cap on Public Health Service officers. So in previous years, we could only go up to 6,500 officers nationwide in the Public Health Service. It lifts that cap now, so we could go up to 10,000 or even more. Another thing it did was make all officers regular corps, and it eliminated the reserve corps, regular corps. This is a little bit, it's a little bit technical, but when people came into the Public Health Service, they came in reserve corps, and then they had a probationary period of 3 years, could eventually ask to be assimilated into regular corps. And so some people did and some people didn't, and you had reserve corps officers and regular corps officers. We were all on active duty, but there were two categories. Well, at the flip of a switch on the 23rd of March, when this legislation went into effect, all officers were now regular corps. That was great, except for it had unintended consequences. We could only bring on board into the Public Health Service reserve officers. And so we went for a year without being able to call anybody to active duty into the public health service because the policies and legal authorities all had to be changed, and they're still being changed. So this has affected compensation, it's affected personnel issues, and a number of other things that we're still working through. It also creates a medical reserve corps that hasn't been stood up yet, but the medical reserve corps will stretch across the country and will include medical providers and nurses and other types of providers, as well as dentists, and that will be coming soon. The final thing is it established a public health sciences track, which we were all so excited about because the public health sciences track would fund 850 scholarships per year for healthcare professionals, 100 dentists per year. Realize that the public health service now has less than 400 dental officers. So 100 dental officers per year, that would be amazing for the public health service. But in fact, it was also funded, but it was funded out of another emergency pot of money, and the people who had that funding said, wait a minute, you're taking our money to do this, and it went to Congress, and it all went on hold. So it offered great potential, but we don't know if we'll ever see this actually happen. But if it does, then you'll see a number of people coming through dental schools on scholarships. One of the things I wanted to talk about was that in addition to the Affordable Care Act, there are so many other things happening in the federal government. Just within HHS, all of these things have happened in the last 2 years. In 2 years, all of this has happened, and it's just an amazing amount of opportunity, amazing amount of energy around oral health, and as Myron said, just the final bullet just happened today with Healthy People 2020, oral health now being a leading health indicator for the first time ever. Realize there are 42 topic areas, and oral health is now one of the 12. And so we have Gina Thornton-Evans and Rochelle Rollins and Marion Mahegan and a number of other people to thank for working so hard to make sure that oral health is one of those top leading health indicators, because that's what HHS really says are the priority areas. This will really help us to raise the visibility of oral health and to leverage off this. And there are other things that are happening that aren't HHS that are also exciting. Next week will be the inaugural meeting of the U.S. Oral Health Alliance, and that's a network across the nation of a broad constituency of people that have come together to work on oral health, to establish this network. Now there are a number of grantee states that are part of this as well, and so they're developing this broad national network that we've never had around oral health. It's very exciting. And then you probably know about the Ad Council campaign that will be starting next summer. This will be a 3-year campaign. The Ad Council are the groups that did Friends Don't Let Friends Drive Drunk, and This Is Your Mind on Drugs, and Smokey the Bear. You remember the Ad Council campaigns once they're on TV. Well, for the next 3 years, it's going to be about oral health and raise the visibility about the importance of oral health. So there's all these good things happening, and sometimes I see people getting discouraged, and I just want to give you that message that there are a lot of good things happening. And so I really think that the way forward for us is to that strategic awareness is our key. We all need to sort of understand our roles and how we all fit together. We're going to have to enhance our public-private partnerships. That's already starting. We're going to have to enhance our partnerships with other types of medical providers, and that's already starting. We're going to always have to keep oral health in the media, keep that visibility high, raise oral health literacy, and be resilient and adapt well, because we all know everything's happening so fast we can't keep up on it. We're going to have to keep each other informed. We're going to have to support each other. But working together, we are going to advance the oral health of the nation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. That was an awful lot of information in a short period of time. And this is an exciting time. Even though things are bad with the economy, people aren't having jobs, and budgets are being cut, 44,000 local and state health departments have cut their personnel in the last couple of years. There is hope, and things are happening, and we appreciate your leadership in making that happen. Thank you very much. Excellent. Our next speaker is Rick Valakovic. Dr. Rick Valakovic. He's the executive director of the American Dental Education Association, ADEA. He's also the president of the ADEA William Guy's Foundation. He joined ADEA in 1997. Prior to that, for some 20 years, he was in research practice and teaching pediatric dentistry, oral medicine, and oral radiology. He served on the faculties at Harvard and University of Connecticut. As you know, ADEA represents all the dental educational institutions in the country, dentistry, hygiene, and assisting. And Rick has brought some very energetic leadership to ADEA. I want to just tell a little personal story about Rick, which most people don't know. Many years ago, in the early 80s, when the AIDS epidemic began, as the city dental director, I was getting an awful lot of calls from people with AIDS who couldn't get dental care because the private practitioners were refusing to treat people with AIDS. As a matter of fact, at that time and for a couple of years, there was more discrimination suits against dentists about discrimination in AIDS than any other group in the country. And we had a string of health center dental programs in Boston that did, which were under my control and supervision. We treated people with AIDS and hepatitis B. But we had a lot of calls from people from out of Boston. My responsibility was the city of Boston. We were getting calls from all over. When these calls initially came in, I'd say, well, contact the dental schools, and I named them. And then people would call back and said, the dental schools won't take us as patients. I said, what? Well, it turned out of the four dental institutions in Boston, only one would take patients with HIV. And when I looked into it, the person who was doing it at that one dental school, which was Harvard, was Rick Valakovic. And as a result of that, I had Rick come in and we did the first HIV training for the health center dental personnel. I don't remember what year it was, 83, 84, but very early on, and we've been doing it ever since. And we brought in the private sector, and we now mainstream HIV patients. It's a whole different world today. But, you know, Rick was out there right from the beginning, and that's the type of guy he is. So let's give a round of applause to the